money and markets, of course, what we've got to talk about is Syria. The pro-Syria team led by President Obama and Kerry are bogged down in the mud. They've been forced to go to Congress. Congress has come back. Some members of Congress who were expected back on the 9th have come back early. There's a lot of wrangling going on. Very bad for the president. The Brits have voted no, and that's tough because usually it's the Brits swing in as the close ally, and the Anglo-American alliance acts as one. This time, the U.S. is going to have to go it alone. Polls show that the Americans are very opposed to war in Syria of any kind, even if it's not boots on the ground. There's a G20 meeting in St. Petersburg today and tomorrow. Putin apparently opened, saying many people didn't want to talk about what was on the agenda. They wanted time to talk about Syria. So Putin is clearly applying the torture. Among other things, the president of Brazil has canceled their trip, apparently as a result of the Snowden revelations. Of course, NSA was hacking and tracking numerous foreign leaders and dignitaries. And, of course, Snowden now being under Putin's protection and Obama having to deal with this at G20, I'm sure it's a difficult 2 days. Now, what is all of this about? If you look at the plan laid out by the Pentagon after 9/11, you had a list of countries that were expected to be attacked, occupied, and basically brought into empire after 9/11. Syria was on the list. I heard that presented several times. A great way of understanding the sort of overall grand chessboard is a video I put up by General Wesley Clark describing the fact that that was the plan at the top of the administration right after 9/11, and it continues. In part, it's about, yes, it's about the dollar. In part, it's about gas and oil. If you look at the one our cartoonist made, our latest Soleri tune, it's up on the blog, and he sent me one that was sort of deriding Obama pushing for Syria, but it didn't really give any of the deeper meaning. And in fact, I sent him a little note back saying, here, I want something that's really about the real deal. And he put that note up on his Facebook page. So we put it up with the first draft. If you click back on the blog, you'll find it. But the new one clearly mentions the dollar issue in gas and oil. But I think it's about a lot more than that. And one of the things that makes the leadership look so ridiculous is they're not in a position to... they're not in a position to say, and my guess at the end of the day is if you look at both sides of the squabble, whether it's the Chinese and the Russians trying to lock up Middle Eastern market share and oil and other resources, or the Americans, neither side is for the people. We have a series of increasingly totalitarian and centralized regimes squabbling with each other, and frankly, as long as they're squabbling with each other, we're probably better off than if one of them gets their way globally. But all of them are members of the pro-centralization team. As far as I'm concerned, I put a little blog post up on the blog today about false flag operations. And one of the things I said, the gods are warring. And as I said, part of it involves more fallout from the NSA spying revelations, which, from Obama's standpoint, couldn't come at a worse time. Let's talk about disassociated leadership. There was a Bill Moyers interview of a New York Times editor who's written a new book called This Town, and it has really resonated with people because it's apparently done an effective job of communicating the fact that you have an entire town that makes money from centralization, including centralization that causes the economy to fail, causes people to fail. The worse things get, the more money they make. So you have a win-lose relationship between their profits and the general wealth and well-being of the whole. So it's almost like they're being paid and enjoy liquidating the American people and people globally. But the insensitivity and the sort of craziness of it somehow magically got communicated in this book, in this interview, and it's really resonating. Somehow, finally, people are beginning to realize that you have a group of leaders who are completely disassociated from real life. I'm reminded of a song by Leonard Cohen where he sings, "We are blinded by the beauty of our weapons." These are people who've been protected by, you know, powerful weaponry, media propaganda, and covert operations. They thought the system was working. The reality is system ultimately can't work just by force. There has to be the mandate of heaven. In no story this week was the example of this kind of cluelessness worse than a private briefing that a group of agricultural leaders, including Joel Salatin, received from the Secretary of Agriculture, who talked about the fact that the rural population was shrinking, and that was very bad because they were the people who provided young men and young women into the military. So if the population shrinks, then you have trouble getting more soldiers. And Salatin was completely stupefied and wrote a great blog post about the fact that the Secretary of Agriculture doesn't mind farms disappearing. He just minds, not being able to source more kids for the military. This is exactly the kind of topics we were talking in with Colonel Wilkerson in our interview several weeks ago with him. And if you haven't listened to that, I would really recommend it, because he was basically saying, look, you know, we have real problems. We can't afford to have leadership that have, you know, been promoted just because they make more money for defense contractors. And we need greater transparency because we need to deal with real problems. We need our resources going there. So you have an instability in the situation, because we now have a leadership group that has risen based on a certain kind of politics, and unfortunately are becoming increasingly clueless. I keep saying, where is Lee Atwater when we need him? Lee Atwater being the campaign manager for George H.W. Bush, who was really from, you know, he really came up from the bottom. And he stayed in touch with the streets and brought a kind of political intelligence to Washington that it's missing right now. Financial markets were in crunch time. If you take a look at the slides that we've put up, and again, we'll have the slides on the blog if you're not listening live. What you're beginning to see, interest rates are continuing to sneak up, and what we have is as we've talked about so many times in the Salieri Report, the bonds and contingent liabilities in the legacy systems are really beginning to pinch. The long-term bull market in bonds is over. Now the IUs are coming due. We have political leadership trying to sort of go around in circles rather than tell people the bad news. And part of what you're seeing in Syria and the different leadership is squabbling over who's going to get what cash flows as those IOUs come due, because the pain is real. The Fed meeting is coming up on September 17th and 18th. And the big question, of course, in everybody's mind in the markets is, will they start to taper? If they do, this pendulum of pulling capital from the emerging markets is no doubt going to continue. It's going to create more tension in the bond market. If they don't taper in September because of sort of the discomfort of what's going on, don't be surprised if they make more announcements about when they are. But tapering's coming, as I said. The leadership has decided to lower the boom. We have the German elections on the 22nd, so Merkel's head is on the block, and that's going to have a lot to say about how the workouts in Europe continue to go down. And I think after that is when the bailouts are likely to proceed. Now, even though we have and let me just say a few words about a couple of the markets. The emerging markets have been correcting down, as has the North America market, and just in the last 20 to or few months. And then Europe, which has been relatively flat, we've seen a little, as talk of war goes up, the equity markets turn up. Gold, which has been rising, it's up about 8% over the last few weeks. Is now got hit hard today, so it's turning down. But I would basically describe all of this as noise and going sideways. It wouldn't surprise me if gold heads down in another correction before it comes up. Again, we're coming into the strongest time of the year, so I think whether it goes down or sideways for the next month or two, that may just be noise. We'll talk a lot more about precious metals next week with Franklin Sanders, but sitting off in the corner with plenty of money is the guys with the black budget boys, as I would say, Interestingly enough, they appear to be the ones pushing hardest for war. Maybe they'll finally wake up and smell the roses and say, you know, it's hard to keep doing these things unless you have some support from the population. You can't just keep harvesting the population and expecting them to show up and support you on these things. They clearly want a move into Syria. There's rumors of unauthorized nuclear bombs moving into South Carolina, you know, question mark for what reason. But we're seeing a lot more information on the black budget sneak out. And I think it's because as the leadership seems disassociated and it becomes inconceivable to understand why we want war in Syria without, deeper understanding of reality, I think people are finally beginning to take a look at what's really going on. We saw Richard Souter just came out with a new pretty good book on underground facilities, and I posted a review. It's up on the blog. Lars Scholl also had a great interview with one of the researchers on JFK that pointed out that he estimates that over 1,000 people have now been killed in the process of covering up the assassination. I think that's probably a pretty reasonable number. And I always stress to the Salieri Report subscribers, please don't underestimate how many people have tried to do the right thing in America and how many people have been harmed and destroyed and including killed. We also see lots of materials coming out on things. I put up a little review of Moon Rising and Moon Views, two documentaries about what in the world's going on the moon, working with the NASA sort of video and photo archives. Very interesting documentary. But one of the ideas that came up was space elevators. And I put a couple of the videos up in Wildcard so you could see what the idea is. Interestingly enough, as the new technology, both composite materials and fabrication technology, starts to come into the economy, and as Dr. Farrell says, he thinks a lot of it's coming out of the black budget, which wouldn't surprise me, a lot of these ideas become more practicable. Once you have something like graphene coming out of the lab, when and if that happens, you know, it becomes a lot more feasible to build something like a space elevator. So don't be surprised. And I think it's one of the reasons you're seeing a lot of Silicon Valley entrepreneurs talking about space and going into space, because the new technology makes it more feasible. One other very interesting black budget story, back a week or two on the blog, more on the San Bernardino bankruptcy. Little known fact, San Bernardino was the absolute center of black budget mortgage fraud. So, that in and of itself. But keep expecting this stuff to leak out and start to get integrated with information about what's going on and what it has to do with things like the sort of kooky behavior of the leadership and going into places like Syria. Because at some point, I think we're all going to want an integrated picture of reality, and we're not going to get it. As I said, the global economy at this point is really run to serve the black budget. And so you have a force that's harvesting the entire planet, trillions of dollars going into it. And now we have a great deal of capital throughout the world moved into the black budget, sort of controlled corporations. And so, if that's where all the money's disappearing into and that's where all the technology is, at some point, we're going to have to understand it and deal with it in the overt world. Also on the blog this week, the interview that I did last month with Eunice Boston on coming clean and sort of cleaning and making sure your home is beautiful was so popular and really triggered some delightful insights. We decided to make it accessible to the Salieri blog readers because it's a great sort of example of what you get through the Salieri Report, which is very unique. So if you haven't and are interested, please feel free to send that forward to your friends and family and network. It's a wonderful interview, and I think gives just wonderful tidbits on what you can do to make your life more wonderful. Stupidest idea of the week. For many years, I supported myself with tips as a waitress or bartender. That was a very important source of income when I was in college. And This week, an IRS rule is leading restaurants to rethink automatic tips so that they won't put a tip on the check. Now, why is this so horrible? Well, one, it absolutely can contribute to much lower earnings for waitresses, but it comes at exactly the same time that Obamacare has caused many of the chain restaurants to reconsider their employment policies. We now have over 250 major employers who have cut work hours, jobs, or taken other steps so they can avoid or pull health care. So here we have employees who've been getting health care, and now they're going to lose it as a result of these companies trying to duck Obamacare. And so if you're a waitress, you're losing your health care at the same time the IRS is cutting your tips. It's almost like the administration has decided to make war on bartenders and waitresses, so, and busboys. So if I could say any one thing you can do as a blow for democracy is please leave big tips for waitresses and bartenders, and make sure you leave them in cash.